Let us pray. Dear God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. A couple of days ago, I had, appropriately enough, an epiphany. An epiphany is, according to Merriam-Webster, an appearance or manifestation of a divine being, or a sudden perception of the essential meaning of something, an intuitive grasp of reality through something simple and striking, an illuminative discovery, a revealing moment. So the season of Epiphany began on Thursday, and it is a time when we celebrate the manifestation of Christ to the world, whatever that means. It's one of those theological phrases that makes everyone just shy of a crusty theologian glaze over. So let's just leave that be for a little while and listen to the story and see if things become more clear. So musing about the Magi and their journey to Bethlehem, what I realized is that the season of Christmas can be for me the Herod season. Sometimes I am more like Herod than I am like anyone else in the story. Remember that when the Magi went looking for Jesus, he was no longer a babe in arms. We are so accustomed to hearing the story as part of the nativity that we forget that he was about 2 years old by the time the Magi set out. There was talk about this child, and Herod had heard it. He was nervous and threatened by the rumors of this new king. So when the Magi landed at his door, asking where they might find the child, Herod tried to turn their visit to his advantage. He instructed the Magi to return to him so that he might go and worship the babe also. Poppycock. Herod was acting out of fear and panic. He was a king, and his subjects were getting out of hand. His rule was threatened and his position in question. So he schemed and he connived and he planned and he controlled, all because he was selfish and scared and preoccupied. Like many of you, I get a little revved up around Christmas. I love Christmas, and I'm bound to certain traditions that keep me more often than not in the kitchen. In the season, it's the season when I write sermons in my apron. And I especially love the season of Advent for the balance that it provides. But I can get snippy, because there is so much to do in the church and at home. Organization, and some might call it control, are key. Keeping all the balls in the air requires a lot of diligence, and at times I feel like Herod, scheming, controlling, trying to keep everything on track and make sure that things go my way. We have always considered Herod to be the bad guy, but he was a king whose power was not invincible, and he knew it, and so do I. Once I found myself identifying with Herod, I looked more closely at the story and found I could actually see myself in any of the roles, especially the Magi. And here's why. I travel a lot by starlight. It's dark in the winter when I go out for my morning constitutionals. There is an enormous planet in the south that dominates the night sky, and that star or planet has been there all fall and winter, and is most winters. Several Christmases ago, when he was visiting, I dragged our son Zeb out of bed and outside before dawn. Pointing at the bright star in the east, I said, "What is that?" "I don't know," he mumbled, heavy with sleep and retreating into the house. "I don't know." He has a master's degree in aeronautical engineering and is a flight director at NASA, and I get, "I don't know." "Wait, Zeb," I said, "that is not good enough." Well, he admitted it's probably Venus. In the mornings when I go out in the dark, I have that beautiful planet to guide me, at least when it's clear, which incidentally it was not this past week until the frigid air hit on Friday night. Then we had some glorious skies, and I couldn't help but think of the Magi traveling by starlight. And it became a clear metaphor to me for what it means to be a Christian. Like it or not, I do not always travel by daylight, and I suspect that neither do you. Things go wrong in our lives. For long stretches, many of us feel that we are groping in the dark. Our health, our relationships, our security, our livelihoods are subject to the whims of fate. And no matter how Herodian we are, how diligent or controlled or astute we are at ferreting out danger, things go awry and we find ourselves in the dark, don't we? But we keep going, some of us with more conviction than others. More people than we realize simply can't find the star to light their path, and they fall into a dark hole of depression or sorrow. But that doesn't mean that the star isn't there. It gets obscured by clouds and storms, but it still shines somewhere in the darkness. What became clear to me one morning this past week is that as Christians, we are in fact called to travel by starlight. It's not that we are always in the dark, it's that we know the star is hung for us, even if we can't see it. This is the promise of our faith, the promise that light shines in the darkness, the promise and the hope of Jesus. Of course, our lives aren't always dark. There are glorious times when the people we love are happy, and for however short a moment, even one Christmas Eve service, all seems right with the world. There are times when the sun is so radiant that the star is obscured and we forget. We forget that we need God. We forget to pray because all is well. And we forget to give thanks because we're busy and happy and fulfilled. It's been my experience, however, that those stretches aren't any too long. Something catches us up. Something as apparently insignificant as a dog's smile, or as weighty as betrayal, or as numbing diagnosis, and we know instantly that life is precarious and tinged with exquisite beauty, accessible joy, and apparently sometimes fathomless despair. Beyond finding ourselves inadvertently traveling most of the time in the dark, sometimes we are actually called as people of faith expressly to seek out the darkness. Where injustice and hate reign, we are called to proclaim justice and love. When nations spit threats of war, we are called not to run from the conflict, but to enter into the dark arena of debate and try and shed some starlight. When we hear that the food shelves are empty or refugees in need, the Salvation Army lacking for food and volunteers, we are called with a distinct measure of urgency to those dim places. And when we find ourselves stewing in the acrid juices of anger, maybe towards someone we love even, we are called not to antacids, but to honesty and confrontation with grace. That God saw fit to consecrate this earthly planet with the supreme gift of Jesus in human form tells us that the stuff of our lives is holy and worthwhile and to be treasured. It is our great blessing to be able in large and small ways to proclaim that light does shine in the darkness. It's easier, though, said than done, isn't it? This casting light in the darkness, or finding the star when the cloud cover is thick. It's hard work. When I go out in the early morning, I need all the help I can get, because some days it seems nearly an impossible adventure. And here's some of the help I get. The most important help that I get is from my grippers, studded snow tires for Homo sapiens that fit neatly over my running shoes and keep me on track. We need that kind of security when we head out in the dark, in just the same way we need to remember that God is with us all the time, not just when we scream for help or see the star shining brightly. Jesus runs beside us, lighting the path. And I have warm leggings, too. I won't show them to you. The front of them are wind and water resistant, and the back are breathable, which is a good thing. And when we head out into treacherous weather, we need to be clear about our boundaries and discerning about what we will let in and what we won't let in. The line between empathy and absorption is dim, and we run the perpetual risk of getting sogged down. All the new technology has helped a lot in the active sportswear industry, so I can miraculously stay warm and dry when my shirts are wet. This is a simple miracle, and miracles happen when we have the courage or the foolishness to make the world a better place. So my hands get cold, and my toes get cold. So I have these little gizmos that I put toe warmers under my socks, hand warmers in my mittens, and it's like sitting beside a warm fire and drinking cocoa or having someone you love hold your hand. Companions are important. The Magi did not travel alone. They went together. We need people to hold our hands in the dark. Don't try and be a hero or let your pride keep you from asking for help. And because it's dark and Vermonters drive to work early, I have this little reflective vest, which I wear over my jacket, over my water-shedding clothes. If someone asks why you are doing something, even though it is odd, be sure to tell them. If someone says that you look funny standing up for Jesus, be proud. In the middle of the night last summer, having not slept most of the night, I crept back into our bedroom and told Charlie I was going to go visit a family because the father was dying. And Charlie rolled over and asked if his wife had called. And I said, no, God called. Listen first. And don't be afraid to tell others who made you do it. Reflect the credit back where it belongs, like that vest which reflects the light back. And I wear ear warmers, and I wear hats to hold the warmth in that I naturally generate. No matter how warm I am on really cold mornings, this is the best part, my face gets cold. And so I put on a face mask like this. I've been called Darth Vader more than once. When you venture into shady places, when you step out of your normal routine and chat with a homeless person on the street, or travel to Washington or Montpelier to march and make your views known, you might be self-conscious and embarrassed. Remember, it's not about you. And my eyes water badly. And when your eyes water, your nose runs. So I wear ski goggles when I go out in the morning. You try it. And so my eyes don't water and my nose doesn't run. And tears don't blur my vision. I wonder if we are reluctant to address hard issues or go into the darkness because we worry that if we do, we might start crying and never stop. People tell me this actually all the time. They fear that the pit of their despair has no bottom and they will drown in sorrow. The good news is that Jesus is at the bottom of the well with a sump pump. You will not drown. Fear not, the angel said. And last but not least, there are a few mornings, though fewer than you would think, when light does not shine in the darkness, when I bump into the mailbox at the top of our driveway and am so glad that no one else is awake to make fun of me. So I suspect there isn't a person here who hasn't felt the hollow silence of God's absence from time to time. Pray and pray, bargain and bargain, to no avail. Give God a break. Maybe things are just too bad in Syria or on the Ivory Coast, or maybe somebody's baby's first breath was her last. I don't know how it works. I don't know how God can be everywhere at once and sometimes apparently nowhere to be found. But I do know that it's up to me occasionally to bear the torch and soldier on in faith, for God is proud and grateful when we share the load. So do you think that perhaps when you are at your best, which is, let's face it, sometimes your most peculiar, when you are following the star, fingering that little shard of whatever light you have, and working with Jesus to reflect light into the darkness, do you think that you might, in fact, be a manifestation of God to the world? I do. God bless you. Grace and peace. And so I wonder if someone